Greetings, greetings once again. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And I know we weren't with you last week, and that's because there just wasn't enough news of any import to me. And this week, after 2 weeks, there's built up enough interesting things that I might can do an hour or so. Welcome, welcome. It's so good to have you. Before we get into the events that concern all of us this week, I just want to go to the Daily Bloodbath file. KCCI noted in Iowa, a 52-year-old man is believed to have killed six of his family members. All six were discovered shot by police. I'm not going to mention the guy's name, but he then killed himself at the end. So just before we get into the stories that everyone's concerned about this week, just remember that this story would have dominated the headlines for weeks when my parents were children, 50, 60 years ago. This would have shocked the nation for weeks. Nobody would have talked about anything else. And it barely makes the second page of the Breitbart report, way down below the fold. Just to give you a perspective on where we are. That's the Daily Bloodbath file. From Iowa, by the way. Not New York City, not Chicago with mobsters and Tommy guns. No. Anyway. So another barometer of where we are. If you're paying attention, and we are, thank you very much. Gold has officially overtaken U.S. government bonds as the world's top reserve asset. And you might say, what does that even mean? Who cares? Gold, just a sign of the times. In fact, this is from the Sign of the Times file. So I know so many of my Christian brothers and sisters spend an inordinate amount of time looking for signs of the time. Well, signs of the times, I suppose I should say. And while I suggest you don't waste your time looking for signs of the times from the Bible to be happening, this is a sign of the times that just happened this past week, and I can assure you this is significant. If the Lord tarries and allows us to languish on this planet for another 1,000 years, historians will write about this event in the history of the collapse of Western civilization, one of the landmarks that laid bare the landscape that should have been obvious to everyone, one of the signposts along the highway was the week that gold overtook U.S. government bonds as the world's top reserve asset. What this means is that the rest of the world has lost confidence in America. And what that means is, well, bad, hard, rotten, rough times for the world. Because America was the last great hope of the world. And the world has now lost confidence in us. As well they should have. For crying out loud, a guy slaughters his family in Iowa, and Americans don't even have time to notice. I mean, barely notice. So you can't have a lot of confidence that that civilization is going to be able to carry off the world leadership that has been required for the past century and a half or so. It's just not possible that that can work. And the rest of the world has realized that. Hence, they're not buying stock in our future any longer, at least not at the rate they used to. They're more interested in buying dirt. Gold is dirt. I mean, it's a form of dirt, and it's shiny, and I know. but it's dirt. People are more interested in buying dirt than they are in investing in the future of America. Just a sign of the times, that not to be pessimistic about anything. Everything's going to be fine. Just sit back and crack open another Diet Coke and turn on the game. It'll be fine. Meanwhile, speaking of gold, this is from the Popular Populist file. The Trump administration is spending $5 million. No, wait. How does Donald Trump say it? The Trump administration is spending $5 million. $5 million to paint four bronze horse statues around the Lincoln Memorial in a layer of gold leaf. Donald Trump likes the gold. He's got a thing for the gold leaf. It's a very earthy thing. He's a very earthy guy. You can relate to the guy. Like on NBC's The Meat Press this morning before... I know, it's called Meet the Press. Here at the Weekly Worldview, we call it The Meat Press. They just got the words a little bit out of order. And Donald Trump showed why it is The Meat Press with the, and I don't even know the girl's name who was interviewing, Stelter, Kelter, Helter Skelter, I can't remember her name. But there was an NBC reporter interviewing President Trump, pretending that the election in California was anything other than outright fraud, theft. In fact, not just that, because those are much too subtle words. What's happening in California is an insurrective act of treason against the people. It's violence against the people that's happening in California right now with their election. And has been happening, by the way, for the last, I don't know, half a dozen election cycles, if not more. And so the girl on NBC, she has the audacity to look at the president of the United States in the face and say, have you presented any evidence that there's fraud? And he verbally basically gave her the back of his hand, took off the microphone and said, let's get out of here, guys. This is ridiculous. And then I love the fact that NBC leaks the video so that people can see what a rude, crude, misogynistic. And everybody just loves it because, I mean, the only thing that could have been better was instead of a verbal back of the hand, well, no, we don't. We wouldn't want to see that because we don't want to see violence of any kind. And that's why I want to stop in the gold leaf story and just tell everyone, remind everyone that when the government executes violence upon its citizens long enough, eventually the citizens will at least attempt to inflict violence back on the government. And so the overthrow of the government is, by definition, violence against the people. Do you know where the word violence comes from for all of you who matriculated in the government schools? Violence doesn't have to be physical. That's right. And I don't have to be an eighth grade public school teacher accused of saying words are violence, because words are violence. And so when the government inflicts violence on the people, violence is to violate. Violence is the violation of another person, and it doesn't have to be physical. In fact, non-physical violations are often much harder to resist and defeat than physical violations. And physical violations are always predicated by non-physical violations. Now, the violation being inflicted upon the populace of the state of California and wherever else they're having elections, which I'm sure there are other elections in which insurrectionists are cheating almost as effectively as they are in the state of California. Wherever those people are, wherever that violence is being inflicted this week, and then next week and the week after, and like for about a month, So that is actually physical violence against the people because the ballots are being physically manipulated and stamped. And in fact, all right, let me finish with the gold leaf on the horse because I can't resist. Donald Trump has a thing for gold. And the thing about these horses, and I've criticized President Trump, by the way, for putting the gold leaf on everything in sight because it's just a little gaudy in my economy, okay? But to each his own, I suppose. And the thing about the horses there that he's ordered to have them painted gold is when you see what they looked like before, it's like, man, did anybody even bother cleaning these things for like the last 50 years or however long they've been there? Because they just looked, I mean, they looked disgusting. They looked like someone had vomited on them over and over and over for like a decade. And so he wants to paint them, and instead of just cleaning them off with a power washer, he says, hey, let's coat them in gold. It's the 250th anniversary, and whatever. I mean, I'm not gonna raise too much of a... But the thing is it's the $5 million, okay? I know, it's not a lot of money. They spend $5 million in Washington, D.C. just scraping under one fingernail during a meeting. That's $5 million. So I know it's not a lot of money, but still... It is another sign of the times. The height of arrogance is to be painting horses gold in the Capitol while the country is literally crumbling, while the families of the country are being slaughtered by their own family members in rates that should be astonishing and shocking and horrifying. We're painting horses gold in the Capitol. It's like I say, 1,000 years from now, there will be a poem about it. And people will be like, how could they have done that? But here we are. The painting of the gold horses is a part of a slew of beautification projects that the Interior Department, they're spending about $100 million to just clean up the place. And because here's the thing, what's been happening over the past, my entire lifetime, is that the government of America has shifted from doing things the government should do, like keeping the streets clean and making the statues look like they haven't been puked on by pigeons for 100 years, and making the bridges work and the streets and, you know, all the stuff government should do. For my entire life, there's been a shift, a seismic shift away from doing what the government should do to robbing us blind and stuffing money in the pockets and running and hiding and buying beach houses somewhere and filling Swiss bank accounts. That's the shift that's been happening for my entire lifetime in America. And it's documentable. And so here I am ranting and raving about it. And it's about right, about the 250th. That's about how many years it takes for the entire algorithm to kind of work itself out. The pioneers come, and then the settlers, and then the kids, and they work, and they build, and then they squander, and then they slaughter each other, and that's the end. And it usually takes about 250 years. And so the concert, there was going to be a concert. I heard that the concert has been canceled, but then now it hasn't been canceled. I don't really know. It's a Freedom 250 concert so that we could all pretend we're free 250 years on. From our victory over the greatest empire that ever ruled the world, and we defeated them in a war, which... And so we were free, and now we're pretending we're still free. We're going to have a concert to pretend we were free, and I heard about all the washed-up artists who started backing out of the concert, and I realized that this is the first I've heard of many of these artists in many, many, many years, and the first I hear of them, they're walking out on a concert. And I thought, you know, Donald Trump, he always treats the lower class help type people. He has a reputation for treating them well. He treats the help well, right? And so here he is trying to reach out to all these washed up artists who haven't been on the charts. They haven't had a gig. Their phone hasn't rang in 10 years. He calls them up and says, hey, come out to Washington. We'll give you a gig. And inexplicably, they end up walking off and quitting. I think this was part of his beautification project. Hiring second and third tier musicians to give them a chance and have them come back. I mean, really, literally, Martina McBride, are you kidding me? Martina McBride? her last paid gig, as far as I can recall, was whatever royalties she got for being Sean Hannity's intro music for like 10 years, like 10 years ago. I mean, I heard that she quit. I thought, well, I'm glad to hear she's still alive. Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney, and that really should have been the attitude of the artists. It's like they should be thankful for the work. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Not that that's really all that big a deal, but just yet another sign of the times. Just a sign that America has gotten so fat and comfortable that even artists who nobody has heard of in 10 years are so rich and fat that they can turn down a gig. It's just, all right. Meanwhile, let's jump into the Democrat predestination file. You've probably heard about the argument over predestination and free will. And it's an argument that happens in theological circles and theology schools and academe, among those who debate theology. And so there's some debate there, and that's all fine. But in politics, there is no debate. We now know that there is predestination in politics. That's right. Judicial Watch says it has identified almost 1 million voter registrations in California inactive for at least 3 federal election cycles. And you might ask, why are all of these inactive voter names and addresses? It's as if they're still alive and active, yet they haven't been used for almost 3 federal election cycles. Why would they still be on the books? Well, that's how you arrange predestination in the state of California. Now, Judicial Watch, which is a watchdog group, according to PJ Media, and certainly they are, they say that these inactive voters must be removed to ensure potential cheaters cannot use the names on faked ballots. Wait a second. Did they use the word cheaters and faked? So these are two words that it didn't start in the year 2000, because back when they said that George W. Bush Sr. Jr., which one was it? George Jr.? Back when they said George Jr. stole the election, remember that in 2000 in Florida with the hanging chads? And you remember all that, right? That back then it was okay to say that there was cheating and there was fake. But somewhere around 2020, these words became plugged into the algorithm. So if you use these words, you would be eliminated from the visible public debate online. You would be marginalized and ridiculed in any debate in which you might manage to be heard. And then in the case of Tina Peters, you would be slapped in handcuffs and thrown in prison for a year and a half if you use cheating or faked or anything like that, right? Well, now Judicial Watch uncovers how many, almost 1 million voter registrations. In what state was this? Oh, California, where they count the votes for like a month. And the Democrats always surge and win, huh? And then the news media reports that as if that's okay. And yeah, that's the way it goes. What are you, some kind of conspiracy theorist? which was why it's so great that Donald Trump just got up and walked off the set. He was like, come on. It's like so obviously crooked. It's like I knew that America would never recover from whatever it was that happened in 2020. I knew that this marks a high watermark or so. We never come back from this. When they could steal the election in broad daylight, like pasting up cardboard over the windows and stopping the count. And they did it all and then said, if you said anything about it, you were obviously deranged or crazy or some kind of hick. Anyway, and then they got away with that. And so here we are in 2026, 6 years later almost. And they just continue to do it. Now, Judicial Watch wants the million voters that... that might be used for cheaters. What does he say here? They call them potential cheaters? You're being far too kind. We've witnessed what happens in states like California. It's not potential cheating. It's actual cheating. And I want to point out again, it's violence. And violence begets violence. And so if someone doesn't stand up, if a governing official with the authority to do something about this doesn't stand up and do something about it by force of arms, like they're obligated to do, I'm just telling you, this leads to violence. You can't steal from people right in front of their face in broad daylight and expect them not to respond at some point with violence. Respond against your violence with violence. That's why we need, like, who's the sheriff out there in California who ran against, I can't remember his name, but there was a sheriff out there. Bianco. Matt Bianco. Bianco, what Bianco should do right now, what I hope he's doing, is gathering evidence of all the cheating. And that he marches into the offices of these elected officials with guns and arrests them. That's what needs to happen. Matt Bianco, you thought that your destiny was to be the governor? It's not. It's to be the sheriff. To just act like a sheriff, for crying out loud. Because we, the people, we don't have the means, nor do we have the right, nor the authority to take up arms against the people, the governing officials who are inflicting violence upon us. We don't have the right to fight back physically. Chad Bianco. Okay, Chad Bianco. It's funny, hanging Chad Bianco. So funny I just mentioned that and how that works out. Where was I? Oh, well, we don't have the authority, nor do we have the means to fight against the people inflicting violence on us. That's why you're the sheriff. That's why you have a gun. You're supposed to enforce the law. Chad Bianco should be marching into the office of Gavin Newsom, I think, or I don't know. You could pick probably any one of 1,000 people that Chad Bianco should arrest. He should walk into the post office in Riverside or Bakersfield or wherever he's the sheriff. He should go in and bust the operation live and arrest those people and then start working his way up the chain. That's the only way that we're going to avoid a violent end here in America. That's the only way is if a good guy with a gun stands up and does the right thing. Which we hope that happens. Because let me just tell you, the time for joking around on this matter is past. Steve Hilton, in fact, one of the candidates, he called what's happening in California right now with the with their election. He said it's insane. He said it's just another monument to their uselessness. Speaking of the governing officials in the state of California, Mr. Hilton, I beg to differ. This is not insane. This is very well calculated violence against the people. This is not a monument to the uselessness of the craven politicians who have usurped and conquered the state of California. That's not, this is a monument to their success in inflicting violence against the people. And the time for you to snicker and joke about it, Mr. Hilton, is past. This is a criminal act of violence against millions and millions of people, and that violence needs to be stopped. And it can only be stopped by force of arms, by officials with the authority and the means to do just that. And if they don't come from Riverside or Bakersfield or wherever Chad Bianco's from, then they need to ride in from Washington, D.C. with guns drawn. That's how you stop violence, is by force of arms. Listen to what, listen, why I just said Chad Bianco should be at the post office this weekend. A whistleblower described to Steve Hilton how there were different buckets at the post office. And they were supposed to put the ballots in after they came in after Election Day. And the people were explicitly told in the post office it didn't just have to be a postmark that was on the envelope. It could be a handwritten date that was on the envelope. At the post office. So, you know, we have postal inspectors and that. So there's a federal crime being perpetrated in broad daylight in front of God and everybody. And if someone with the authority to stop it doesn't stop it, I'm just telling you, this doesn't end well. Mr. Hilton goes on. He says, so he reports on this federal crime being perpetrated, which this could be confirmed, by the way. We have investigators. All right, I've said enough. But Hilton goes on, it's unbelievable. It undermines confidence. Mr. Hilton, I appreciate the fact that you're not Nithya ramen noodles or the other Karen Bass, which sounds like a made-up name, and she looks like a totally fake made-up person generated by AI sometime after the COVID hysteria in order to occupy a political office that's being busted out by a mafia criminal gang. Does Karen Bass even actually exist? So, or whoever else it is, Becerra. The fact that he has a political career after the Biden administration is proof that reality has been suspended. The fact that Javier Becerra could have a political career anywhere after he basically allowed millions and millions of people to invade the country, it's just unbelievable. And he's going to be the governor. What, is he the governor? Is he the sheriff? Or is he the... He's not the postal inspector, that's for sure. I forget what he's running for. I think it's governor. And people chuckle about it and say, well, you know, that's California, land of fruits and nuts and all that. Okay. You keep chuckling. The time for chuckling is past, okay? I'm sorry. In fact, listen to this. The Colorado government just released Tina Peters, who they put in prison for, I think, almost 2 years for trying to expose the stealing of the election. She actually gathered the evidence in an undercover operation, and then the people she caught, well, it turns out they had the power to prosecute her. And they did. And the undercover operation that was exposing the crime, they called that a crime, and then they put her in prison for it in broad daylight in America. And she just got out of prison. I can't believe they allowed her to live. Anyway, I'm shocked that they didn't kill her in prison, because the evidence that she has, if she has the courage, and I doubt she does. I mean, after all, she was an elected official, which automatically makes her questionable. Okay, let's just leave it at that. People willing to run for office in America today are of questionable character. They're not the bravest, the strongest, the smartest, the most courageous. They're not. I'm sorry. And so I'm going to assume she's been beaten into submission, and she's afraid now to go back to prison, because prison's rough, I'm sure. A lot rougher than the way she had it before. I know I'm supposed to worship Tina Peters, and, well, I'm sorry, I don't, all right? I hope she has the courage to take the evidence that she got surreptitiously. You know why she had to break the law? Because the people in charge were criminals. The people with the law on their side were criminals. Haven't you people ever seen the movie where the guy has to break the law in order to expose the governing official? Those movies are always like the top number one movies ever, every year. And yet we're all supposed to suspend that understanding. All right. Let's see now. So Tina Peters has been released from prison. Shockingly, she's been allowed to live, which tells me that she's made some kind of tacit agreement that she's not going to push this. But the Article 3 Project, the Daily Caller reports that they've sent a letter to Assistant Attorney General Harmeet Dhillon, asked her to investigate what happened there in Colorado. Investigate. First of all, Democrat Colorado Secretary of State Jana Griswold. I'm telling you, Jana Griswold, if given the opportunity, she'll murder 500 million people. I've looked into her eyes. She'll murder. Anyway. So anyway, investigate her. Okay. I'm glad that the Daily Caller is reporting that the Article 3 Project is calling for an investigation. I'm telling you, the time for investigation, what we need is an investigation in real time where men with real guns show up and arrest the people who are really doing us violence. It's the Weekly Worldview. Thank you for sticking with us. And you asked, Doug, are you calling for violence? Well, first of all, I'm witnessing violence. And I'm not childish enough so that an NBC reporter can convince me that I'm not witnessing violence, that I'm somehow delusional or conspiratorial, or I don't have any evidence. So I'm witnessing violence, so yes, I am calling for violence. But I'm only calling for violence to be applied by the people who have the authority to apply violence in the name of the people, which, by the way, we have those, just so you know. That's why the sheriff has a gun. It's not because he's a conspiracy theorist out looking for potential evidence of this or that. It's because there is violence being inflicted every day, and we know that, we've learned that from like 5,000 years of human history. That's why we give the sheriff a gun, presupposing that there's going to be violence. Why? Because there is. And it's the proper application of violence that subdues evil. Unfortunately, that's the way it is in the world. The proper judicial application of violence is the only thing that subdues the wicked. Because the wicked operate by violence. And so I'm calling for Chad Bianco and Harmeet Dhillon and whoever is the current acting deputy director of the Justice Department, if we even have one, and the Attorney General, all, they should mount up on horses. And they should have six guns on and hats. And they should ride into whatever post office is closest where all of this is going on and exercise violence against those people who are right now at this moment I'm talking to you, inflicting violence upon the people. All right. Yes. So there's my call for violence. So wait for the FBI, or I don't know who arrests people for speaking common sense, I'm sure they're on their way, and that's fine by me. All right. Meanwhile, should I go to this? Let's go to something off topic. Where is Noah's Ark? This is one of the most reliable sources of clickbait ever constructed. Is where is Noah's Ark? You put that on your website, everyone's going to click it. The people who hate Noah and don't believe the Bible and hate God, they click it. Right? The people who, the Christians, they click it. The Catholics click it. The Protestants, everybody clicks it. Why? Because Noah's Ark is really famous. And people like to cash in on the fame that God has established for himself and everything he's done in the Bible. And they do that by just borrowing from him. One of the greatest examples of this is heavy metal music. Heavy metal music stole all their best stuff from God and the Bible, made a fortune off it, pretending that God wasn't real, when actually they were stealing all his material for the whole genre. Anyway, but let's move on. I didn't say that, by the way. It wasn't me. It was a heavy metal rock artist who admitted, look, we stole everything we ever did from God. Okay, and now, so we have, who is this? Based Underground borrows some clickbait from the Bible and asks, what about the location of Noah's Ark? And they get that, and then you click the article because you can't resist. And they say, there's now a new map that's not really that new. It's from the 16th century, and it's been looked at 150 million times, but now we're looking at it again. Why? We needed some clickbait this week. And this map appears to mark Noah's Ark's precise destination. And this just happens to match another destination that other researchers have suspected. And how do we know that this all might be true? Might be. How do we know this might be true? Well, because it's in the mountains of Ararat. And that's where, now that's the only thing they got in this article that we can confirm is true. How do we know that's true? Because that's in the Bible. The one thing we know is that the ark landed in the mountains of Ararat. Other than that, we don't know anything else. And they go on for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 paragraphs that I downloaded. The article's probably significantly longer even than that. Anyway, so they go on. Oh, there's a depiction of Arca de Noe and the Durupinar Formation, which is a boat-shaped site. Have you seen the rocks? He asked. It's extremely attractive. How do you enjoy? Have you seen the Durupinar Formation? No? Because it looks a lot like a boat. And even though it doesn't match the actual description in the Bible, it looks like a boat. To me, it looks like rocks. But anyway, but I'm not going to claim that I'm immune from all of this. I can't remember exactly when it was, but I'm sure it's documented somewhere in my checking account. I donated like $5,000 to a guy who was going to go and find Noah's Ark. I couldn't resist. Anyway, I realize now that it was...
We won't do that again.
Yeah, well, I won't be doing that again. No, I will not. Actually, it was part of another overarching scheme. A friend of mine was going to get himself in shape by getting ready for the hike, and I thought the 5Gs, I was willing to donate that just to help him with the exercise regimen. But anyway, let's leave that aside because we want to get back to this clickbait article. They say that this map from the 16th century, do they give the name of the map? The Planisphere, created by cartographer Urbano Monte in 1587. Mm-hmm. They say, far from coincidence, this map that we've known about for like 500 years adds another layer of mounting evidence that the flood is rooted in historical fact. Okay, so just for you folks at Based Underground, the flood isn't rooted in historical fact. The flood is a historical fact. The fact that you're publishing clickbait about it 4,000 years later proves it's a historical fact. Now, that's another layer of evidence, okay? The fact that you're talking about it. Anyway, the fact that the whole world has talked about the flood for 4,000 years, that's another layer of evidence. Let's see. This is not the first time the Durupinar Formation has captured attention. That's right. This bit's been used as clickbait for decades. And before they even had the internet, they used to publish articles about it in magazines, and it would bring in millions and millions of dollars in donations. No, this is not the first time the Durupinar Formation has captured attention. This is just the first time we've used it as clickbait at basedunderground.com in the last 18 months. Okay. Mainstream archaeology. Listen to this. Based Underground says mainstream archaeology remains skeptical, unquote. Okay, so what this is Based Underground pumping out the clickbait to their target audience, which is Christians and believers and people who are interested in Noah's Ark. and then putting a line in the story that pits them against their arch nemesis, which is mainstream archaeology that remains skeptical. So this is what conservative urinalism has degenerated to, and most Christians don't even recognize this. But this is just a way to get you pitted against your arch nemesis in the article so that by the end of the article, when they hit you with the fundraising line, now you're mad at those, that mainstream archaeologist, skeptical of Noah's Ark. Why, I'll show them, I'll donate my money to these non-skeptical. Based Underground goes on, the rediscovery of this ancient map that was the planisphere by Urbano Monti from 1587. The rediscovery of this ancient map is more than a historical curiosity. It is another thread in the tapestry proving that the Bible's opening chapters record real events with eternal consequences in a culture drifting from its foundations. Such reminders call us back to the unchanging truth that the same God who saved Noah stands ready to save all who trust in his provision today. And that's the end of the article. And that leaves me on the edge of my seat asking the question. What is his provision, my good friends at Based Underground? You believe in Noah? You believe in Noah's Ark? You even say that the Bible records real events. Well, why not elaborate on his provision in the article? It would only take like two more sentences. Why wouldn't you actually speak the gospel right here? I don't understand. If you publish or speak all of this wonderful stuff about the Bible and Noah and our arch nemesis over at mainstream archaeology, if you publish all this without speaking the gospel, then everything in this article is just vanity. At most, it's just vanity. At worst, it's deceit, because you've lured people in with clickbait and you've titillized their flesh, but you haven't given them anything spiritual. Why do you stop at his provision? Do you not want to offend by saying what his provision is, because some people out there might argue with you about it? Maybe you don't know what his provision is. That's what I suspect is the case, is that the folks at Based Underground don't know what his provision is, because if you know what his provision is, you can't help yourself but say it, especially at the end of an article where you said Noah's Ark is real, the flood is real, the Bible is true. You even mentioned God by his name. And then you don't speak the gospel or include it, publish it? I have it in less than a paragraph. I'll send it to the folks over at Based Underground, and I'll let them know that they forgot it here. You neglected to actually just say the gospel, which you led all up to. I was on the edge of my seat. I was like, rah, rah. It was better than Donald Trump slapping that chick on the meat press this morning. It was the best thing ever, and then you forgot. But anyway, there you go. Okay, so I'll send that over to my good friends who I don't actually know. I just, at basedunderground.com. I'll send them my one paragraph gospel and see if they'll include it with their next article where they pump people up about God and the Bible. If you're going to get them pumped up, close the deal. Isn't this the same intro you just played, but just from another band? I think so. We'll have to go back and compare those. That's why my mom and dad said it all sounds the same. Little did I know that it was all the same. All right, that's fine.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think it was kind of, anyway, but let's move on. Right, well, obviously the earlier one you played was copied from these guys, but these guys, what are the odds these guys are copying it from somebody? I have a feeling. All right. But let's go from wherever we were. Oh yeah, what we were on was the gospel, and I'll put it in the description of the show if anyone cares to. You're free to use it. You don't have to give me any credit or pay me any royalty.
Of course, because it's not from you.
Because I lifted it from the Bible. All right. So let's go from there to reason number 2138 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. The Saudis and the Qataris are systematically reshaping how the children in the government schools view Islam, jihad, and the West. Now, we used to view Islam and jihad as horrifying, vicious, utterly terrifying, and we would not allow any of it into America. That's how we viewed Islam and jihad back when we founded the country. If you were a Muslim, you could not come here. Why? Because you had spent the past few hundred years butchering everyone. And you were enemies of Jesus Christ and the cross, and so we kept you out. Now we elect you to Congress, and we allow you to rob us blind. Because we're pretty much at the end of the algorithm here in America. In fact, we are now allowing Muslim invaders. We are allowing the Muslim hordes to invade the government schools. We're doing it willingly in the name of freedom. The historians who write about this will be astonished that any people could have become so foolish in such a short period of time. They'll laugh about it after the conference in which the lights go dark and they show how everybody died and it was so horrible. But then later on, over a drink or two, they'll be like, man, those people must have been out of their minds. I can just see it. All right. The U.S. arm of the Qatar royal family, first of all, there shouldn't be one of those. If there is a U.S. arm of the Qatar royal family, it needs to be chopped off and removed out of the country. We don't have to kill anybody. We could just put them on a plane back to Qatar, wherever they came from. I think they call it Qatar. It sounds like that's the sound a scimitar makes when it goes through someone's neck. Qatar. That's how they pronounce it. And I don't want to have anything to do with it. But they gave $1.5 million to the public schools in Austin and Houston, Texas. Yeah, not Manhattan, not San Francisco, at those crazies out in California in that land of fruits and nuts. No, this is Austin, Texas and Houston, Texas. Right there in a big fat buckle of the Bible Belt. State of Texas. Arabic language and culture programs have been funded. They've hired Arabic instructors in the Austin High School, the Houston Middle School, and the family there. They're supplying textbooks, curriculum materials, and classroom observers. And so you read that and you're like, wait a minute, what's a classroom observer from a Muslim arm of a Qatar family? That, who is that? That's the masked guy over in the corner with the scimitar. That's the observer. Well, maybe not yet, right? Right now, it's an overfed, overpaid NGO volunteer girl in her 20s or early 30s with sticker tattoos on her body. That's who it is right now. That's the observer that the Muslims hired. But eventually, it'll be the guy in the corner with the mask with the scimitar. That's where this all ends. And it's not just Texas, by the way. Brown University has a program, the Middle East Studies. They have what they call the Choices Program, which is a social studies curriculum. Listen to this. Designed there at Brown University, a bunch of communist sodomite freaks. And they developed a curriculum that's being used in over 8,000 high schools in America. A bunch of suicidal girls are designing the curriculum that your children, ladies and gentlemen, this is reason number 2138 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Suicidal teenagers at Brown University are writing the curriculum under the direction of Muslim fanatic murderers. I'm telling you, it's almost like someone's writing a comedy. You couldn't write this into a script and convince anyone that you could make anyone believe any of this, and it's happening right in front of us. And then the folks at the RAR, this is the RAIR Foundation, rarefoundation.com, and I forget what that stands for, but it's against Islamists being allowed to chop people's heads off in America. They're dedicated to that and reporting on and exposing the fact that the Islamists are being allowed to invade. That's what the RAIR Foundation does. I appreciate a lot of what they do. They ask the question, how are foreign governments allowed to fund public school curricula? Question mark. And I just realized, like, that's not a question that folks at a foundation should be asking. That's a question that the sheriff in the local town should be asking before he goes and cracks it open, kicks down the door, and drags someone out of there by their hair and throws them in jail. Islamists are being allowed to write school curricula? Okay, if that's not a crime, it should be. It used to be a crime. You would have been thrown in jail, probably beaten, thrown in the stocks, and kicked out of the country. For trying to infiltrate the school with Islam? I mean, I'm telling you, you can't make this stuff up. What does RAIR suggest is the solution? Mm-hmm. They say in the Congress, there's a Transparency and Reporting of Adversarial Contributions to Education Act. So the RAIR Foundation, who are supposed to be our first line of defense against the Muslim hordes, they say what we really need to do is have transport. We need a law that forces transparency in the reporting of adversarial contributions to education. How about we don't have adversarial contributions to education at all? Let's not keep track of them. Let's not have transparency. That's like having the video camera in your garage so you can watch the guy steal your car. How about we make it so the guy doesn't steal your car because he's terrified of justice? Okay. So let's end adversarial contributions to education by, first of all, ending government education. Because government education is secular and godless, and it'll eventually be penetrated by the adversary. The only reason civilization exists, ladies and gentlemen, is that we're holding the devil back at the barrel of a gun with our heel. And he wants us, and he's constantly coming. And it's taken constant perpetual vigilance to keep the hordes and the beast and the demons off us. And we're obviously losing heart and losing courage, and we've run out of gas, so to speak. So now that, yeah, let's keep track of the adversarial contributions. We'll have the House of Representatives pass that, and then every year we'll be able to look at a list of the Muslim penetrations, and that's supposed to solve the problem. All right, I've said enough. All right. And by the way, how do we defend against the secular invasion designed to kill us or enslave us all and rob us all blind of whatever they have left us with? It's neither transparency and the disclosure of the adversarial contributions. That's not the answer. The banning of such adversarial contributions, the banning of them is not the answer. Although in a sane society, you would have laws against people who want to poison the minds of your children. That should be against the law. But none of those are the answer. Only the gospel of Jesus Christ can actually stop the satanic Islamic conquest of Western civilization. Yeah. And that also would, by the way, end the government schools. And all the, it would end the impact and influence of all of the Muslim and non-Muslims. Did I say non-Muslims? Non-Muslims. So you got the Muslims, they're scary, right? But then you got the secular non-Muslims, the girl with the tattoos on her body who wants to poison your child's mind. The gospel of Jesus Christ stops all of them, all of them. All the creeps and the weirdos and the queers and the molesters and the rapists and the jihadists. It's the gospel of Jesus Christ that stops all of that. And so that's what we need in the schools, which is why we shouldn't have government schools, because the government eventually gets afraid to preach the gospel. And the only place where the courage to preach the gospel can be counted on is in the house of every Christian, in the home. And then that's where we should be educating our children. And so there you go. Reason number 2138, to get your children out of the government schools, get them out of private schools, get them out of any kind of institution, and keep them at home and train them up in the fear and admonition of the Lord. It's not the fear and admonition, right? That's some weird translation. I don't know how I got that early on in my life. Raise them up in the nurture. That's it. The nurture and admonition of the Lord. But by the way, the fear of God's all through the Bible. So it's not that I'm adverse to the fear of God. But raise your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord in your house. And when the Bible says that, it's talking about their education. It's not just talking about like wiping their butt and putting a diaper on them and giving them food. That's not what the Bible means by raise up your child, rear up your child, train up your child. For crying out loud. I mean, beavers and antelope do that for their kids. The Bible's talking about your child's education. All right. Now let's get to what should be the biggest story of the week, and that's the screwworm story. Well, I mentioned it a year or two ago. And now the screwworms, I did not know this about the whole, so have you heard about the New World screwworm that is threatening the beef market, the beef situation for the whole world, at least the Western Hemisphere? Uh-huh. Well, we had this problem back in the 50s and 60s. The screwworms are going to come, and it's basically a fly larva that eats the living flesh of the animals, and then that flesh becomes infected, and it's a bad loop, and it's a cycle of death, and it's awful. So we had the problem back in the 50s and 60s, and back then, sterile flies were irradiated, released in mass, and then they were blanketed over a region that was experiencing one of these screwworm outbreaks, and so they just basically made it mathematically impossible for the female flies to reproduce, and eventually the flies went away. Then the screwworms went away. And the strategy worked back in the 50s and 60s. Cases reached zero in 1982. And it took until about 2004. By 2004, we had pushed these screwworms south of the Panama Canal, south of the Darien Gap into South America. There were no screwworms in North America by 2004. But then, for some reason, the governments of the Western democracies stopped fighting the screwworm. And you ask, why did they stop? Well, they got busy doing other things, like robbing their citizens blind, stealing elections, importing Muslims, and basically becoming deranged, degenerate, fat, rich crooks, which pretty much happens in every country eventually. And in fact, I would posit that the battle against the victory over the screwworm infestation in the Western Hemisphere will be a fairly accurate barometer of the rise and fall of the Western Hemisphere. You'll be able to track it with the screwworm. Listen to this. For about 20 years, there were no screwworms north of the Darien Gap. It was a geographic border that... However, in 2023, mysteriously, by the way, an outbreak of screwworms began spreading north. Right when Javier Becerra was importing millions and millions and millions of people. Right after we imported and allowed millions of unscreened people and whatever they had with them and whatever was going on, and they came through the Darien Gap, they had videos of it. Suddenly, shockingly, these screwworms start appearing again in North America. Well, so now the USDA is going to spend like $1 billion and they're going to build a facility and they're going to try to do what we did in the 1950s and 60s to defeat the screwworms. And what are the odds that the grandchildren of the people that defeated the screwworms, who have more technology and more money, will not be able to figure out how to do it? What are the odds? I think the odds are pretty good. It's because grandma and grandpa back in the 50s and 60s, which now I think that's great-grandma, great-grandpa, they had something that their great-great-grandchildren simply lack. And it's not technology, and it's not money, and it's not power. They have all of that in spades. They have more of it than their grandparents ever hoped for. And yet we can't stop the screwworm like grandma and grandpa did. Okay. Well, it's not up to me to write the epitaph on that. It'll be up to the think tanks and the researchers who debate the fall of Western civilization 1,000 years from now at conferences, where afterwards they have a drink and they chuckle at the insanity that consumed Western civilization. And they'll be able to come to the conclusions about all that, in a secular sense anyway. But I say that what grandma and grandpa had, that we don't have in 2026, is that they had the common understanding of the gospel of Jesus Christ, whether they believed it or not. And most people didn't believe it, but they had actually heard it and they knew it, and they knew that it governed the world. They knew that it was Christianity that held off the barbarians. And so they at least gave deference and lip service to the fact that God was real and that the gospel of Jesus Christ, they knew it would save them from hell even if they rejected it. And because so many people knew that, there was a latent influence of just good in the culture that you just can't stop when the gospel of Jesus Christ permeates a culture. There's so much good that it saturates everything, even the heathens. Even the heathens get it splashed on them. And it protects even them from the barbarians and the maniacs. All right, but what's happened to the gospel? Here's what's happened. From crosswalk.com, there was a global baptize the world movement going on across six continents. 666 continents. Oh no, six continents. I'm sorry. Baptize the world. Listen to this. One of the largest coordinated baptism efforts in recent history. Why is this news? This is because people in religion are trying to gin up stories to make you feel better about the fact that you're losing civilization because you've abandoned the gospel. You should all feel guilty and afraid, but instead, woohoo, 17,000 got baptized. Wow, this is one of the largest coordinated baptism efforts in recent history. I should be proud of myself. The coordinator, a pastor named Mark Francie at Ocean's Church, he says this was about the body of Christ coming together around the world to lift up the name of Jesus and publicly declare new life. So they lifted up the name of Jesus. Here we go. He says, this is what we witnessed here was people saying yes to Jesus. All right, people said yes to Jesus. Oh, yeah. And he says, they go on to report he's been doing this for about 4 years. Francie knows that God was calling him to organize large-scale baptism events. So I wonder if that came to him specifically, like in a dream or a vision, baptism events. Large-scale, by the way. God told him, I don't want no small stuff, God said. I want the big ones only. In fact, I want some of the largest efforts in recent history, is what God apparently. And then the article says, Psalm 133 says that where God's people are in unity, God commands a blessing. Oh, God commands a blessing when we're in unity. That's according to the Psalms, right? He quoted the Psalms. He's on a roll. They go on. Churches are all linking arms together around one of the major creeds of the faith. Oh, he's about to quote one of the major creeds of the faith. Daystar Television broadcast the event. And then they never said the gospel. I'm reading the article. I'm ready. I'm on the edge of my seat. I'm ready to cheer. I'm ready to get a tattoo. I'm ready to send you a donation. And they never preached the gospel. But they said yes to Jesus, and they lifted up his name, and they dunked a bunch of people in water. and the Muslim hordes moved one step closer to the conquest of Western civilization, and the devil stepped his foot on the head of your grandchildren and pushed him down one more level. As the evangelicals are being scourged with the rod of Pentecostal fanaticism and losing the civilization to the devil. That's from the Bad Religion file. All right. But we'll preach the gospel here. I'll put it in the show notes. Check it out. We'll be back with you next time. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.